In 2010, a group of soldiers from Joint Base Lewis-McChord were charged and convicted of killing three innocent civilians in Afghanistan, one of them a 15-year-old boy. The soldiers carefully planted out scenarios and planted weapons on their victims. Platoon member Adam Winfield did not willingly take part in these murders, but at first he didn't try to stop his platoon mates. Long before Army officials learned what was going on, Winfield told his father about the killings, and his father tried to alert the Army.
I finally got a hold of somebody at Fort Lewis at the command center, and I told the guy the whole story. And the guy said, "Nothing I can do about it. It's your son's word against everybody else's. Unless somebody else comes out and says the same story, then I can't do anything."
In the end, Adam Winfield was convicted of manslaughter. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison and given credit for the time served in jail before his trial. A new documentary film chronicles the story of Winfield, his platoon, and their actions in Afghanistan. The movie's called The Kill Team. Dan Krause wrote and directed this film. He told me about the Kill Team's ringleader, Staff Sergeant Calvin Gibbs.
First of all, he was a very charismatic leader, very skilled soldier, someone who the guys really looked up to and trusted. He was the kind of soldier who would get you home in one piece. And he had the experience and the charisma and the skills to really gain the trust of those around him very quickly. And then he started, reportedly started feeling out the other members of his squad to see whether or not they were willing to do the sorts of things that he was planning to do. And so little by little, he started introducing the notion that they could get away with murder in the fog of war.
Adam Winfield is one of the men who was convicted, but he's the centerpiece of the story that you tell. Who is he?
Adam Winfield is from Florida. He joined the Army when he was 17 years old. He was a specialist in the platoon. He was deeply unsettled when these murders occurred, but kept quiet about it because he was fearful that the others in his unit may react violently, perhaps, if he voiced his opinions. But he made some effort through his father back home in Florida to alert the military. And when those initial efforts didn't result in any positive outcome, he decided to remain quiet and try to ride out the rest of his tour so that he could perhaps report these crimes when he returned home. But that, of course, never happened.
Well, in fact, his father, who he alerted well before the military officials heard about this story, did make some effort to tell Adam's story to them. How did the Army respond when Adam's dad contacted them initially?
He left a series of urgent voicemails on the machines of a number of military and government offices and received no response from any of them, actually. He did manage to get a hold of a duty officer at Fort Lewis and was told that there was nothing that could be done from Fort Lewis, that it was his son's word against everyone else's, that it would be best if Adam were to report these crimes when he returned home, and that it was an unfortunate situation that really couldn't be resolved from the U.S. And so Adam's father relayed that to Adam, and that's where they came up with this strategy of sort of laying low and dealing with it once he got home to relative safety.
I'm speaking with filmmaker Dan Krause about his new documentary, Kill Team. This is a story that was widely reported around the world after photographs of these guys took pictures of these murders, and these photos were initially published, I think, in Der Spiegel, a German newspaper. Why did you decide that you were going to focus on Adam as the centerpiece of this story?
I was interested in Adam because he was someone who had the impulse to act in the moral right, and despite those intentions, was drawn into the moral abyss.
After the dust settled from the explosion, Sergeant Gibbs walked up and a smile on his face. I mean, he just shot the guy two more times. He said, "Hey, come take a picture with me, with the body," and he told me that I was a made man and I didn't have anything to worry about from him ever again.
And I thought to myself, how could he be accused of acting in the moral wrong when he had tried to act in the moral right, I wondered about his journey, what had been the pressures that had acted on him in Afghanistan to draw him into the middle between these two moral poles. And what was that tension? What was the experience of living between those two impulses like for him? And I thought that was just emblematic of something larger, and I wanted to try to get at that.
All of the men who spoke to you for this, and I should say that Calvin Gibbs does not appear in this film. I don't know if you interviewed him or not, but all the men that you did speak with, talk about the sense of wanting to do something for their country and a sense of frustration during their tour of duty that they didn't feel that they were doing what they went to Afghanistan to do. How much did that play into turning them from like guys who you would think were, you know, good, honorable, upright American citizens into who we see them as, you know, convicted murderers?
It was a huge factor. It was something that all of the guys described to me in detail and with some visible frustration, because they had been trained as infantrymen. They had been trained to fight, and they were sent over to Afghanistan and asked to be nation builders and peacekeepers. And there was a huge disconnect between the mission and the training. That was one factor. Another factor was that during this period of the war, this was 2010, there had been a number of incidents where civilians had been killed. And as a result of that, the army really clamped down on the use of force so much that the soldiers felt that they were not able to use the tools necessary to defend themselves. And in fact, the restrictions placed on them were protecting the people that they felt were trying to kill them more than they were protecting the soldiers themselves. So there was, I would say, a sense of betrayal that the soldiers related to me, that they felt that they were being left out to hang, to be blown up by new, you know, all the IEDs that they would encounter on a regular basis. They were unable to defend themselves or to prosecute the war in a way that would enable them to return home safely.
Those feelings of frustrations don't lead everybody to commit murder. So I'm curious, what was different about these men?
Well, I don't know that anything was different about these men, and that's one thing that's so important about this story. I mean, this happens. Atrocities happen in every armed conflict since the beginning of recorded history. If you read the Iliad, you'll read about war crimes. So this is nothing new. We don't discover war crimes in Afghanistan. I think, by and large, these were smart, good-intentioned guys who left alone in a very, very alien part of the world, dissociated from all the values that they had grown up with. And this is something I learned in the course of making this film from a psychiatrist, actually, that when you're in this stage of development, even at 19, 20 years old, you are still open to a certain amount of influence in terms of your moral direction. You haven't cemented your ideas completely about what is absolute right and wrong. And when you're divorced, as I mentioned, as you're divorced from everything that's familiar, when you're in a place as alien as southern Afghanistan, and let's face it, I mean, southern Afghanistan for some of these guys was as alien as Mars, because many of them had never left their hometown before. So they really, I think, were subject to this moral reset because of all these things. And then the pressures bearing down on them, all the pressures that I described earlier about the restrictions on use of force, their frustrations at not being able to take measures necessary to protect themselves. These things all contributed to a feeling of desperation. And then, of course, when Staff Sergeant Gibbs entered the picture, according to the soldiers, he was sort of like the spark that lit that flame.
I'm speaking with Dan Krause. He directed the new documentary film Kill Team. Finally, to circle back to Adam Winfield, the centerpiece of Kill Team, he was conflicted. He told his father. The military said he had to wait till he came home. He was involved in one of these incidents, and he came back and was charged with murder and eventually pled to manslaughter. At the end of the day, do you think that what happened to Adam Winfield was just?
In terms of his sentence, you know, Adam has taken responsibility for the crime that he was convicted of, which is failing to stop the other soldiers from committing these murders. Now, I think there's an argument to be made that he should have never been in that situation in the first place. There's also an argument to be made that perhaps he could have done more, and that's part of the tragedy of this story is he's living with a tremendous amount of guilt, both from not doing more to prevent these murders from happening, but also, of course, going along with the incident that occurred on May 2nd, 2010. So, you know, I think the thing that is perhaps outrageous about the story is that these that this young guy was put in a position where he had where he was compelled to try to alert the military at some peril to himself, and that was something that is at the core of the film, this dilemma. What do you do when you find yourself in a situation where there is no good outcome, and what do you do? How do you manage that when every course of action seems to result in some level of disaster? There was no clean solution, no clear way for Adam to find find a way out of this, and that's something that really drew me to the story initially.
Dan Krause wrote and directed the new documentary, The Kill Team. You can see the film when it opens this weekend at Seattle's Varsity Theater.